Hey, what's up, everyone? Welcome to another episode of RoundNet Legends. This is your first time here. Welcome. I'm Mike White with Lefty on 2 RoundNet. This show is all about diving into RoundNet history, talking to the legends and longtime community members to uncover the old-time stories and to learn a little bit more about RoundNet's past and these players' past. If you want to check out all the other episodes and other content we have, check that out at leftyon2.com. To introduce our guest today, who I'm stoked to interview. Truthfully, I always say this, but truly a RoundNet legend. He has been Spikeball Elite 5 times, won a Rallies Aren't Dead Award in a year where rallies were pretty dead. A big RoundNet highlight machine, even if he messes up the end every single time. And most notably, most notably, he was the proud champion of the Rally Podcast Around the Horn episode. Of course, I'm talking about Ryan Fitzgerald. Welcome to the podcast, Ryan.
Mike White, it is an honor, and I'm way too excited to be here.
The honor is all mine. I'm very excited to chat. Eager into every episode. I don't know where we're going to get and what memories come up. Things just come out of nowhere that you forgot completely existed.
It's too fun to talk about.
Yeah.
Too fun to talk about nostalgic Spikeball things.
Yeah. We got a lot of stuff to talk about today, but first, I asked Ryan, right when we got on, when he was going to announce his new team, because I heard some roommates, he's got a new partner, and he said he announced it 10 minutes ago. So we're going to start this off with myself, I guess, checking Instagram and looking for the announcement, and that's where, and see what you got. Y'all ready for that? It came up top of my feed. It apparently already follows this account.
This is good.
This is an announcement for Naughty RoundNet, which I already get the reference, seeing your hair up. Ryan Fitzgerald playing with Jarrett Rouse, 2 OG ballers just here for the rallies. I am so excited. I can't even talk. I heard some talks of some potential partners for you guys, and this is great. You guys are going to be on the Spikeball account like way too many times.
That's what we're looking for.
We should set an over under.
That actually be a good one. Over under.
Over under on how many. I'd say set the over under. How many plays do you guys get on the Instagram account this year? I want to set it at like 15.
15 is really high.
You think so? I think you guys are going to have some great highlights.
I mean, 15, that's.
All right. Let's say 10. The over under is 10.
10's closer.
Spikeball posts every day.
They do. Yeah, 10's a good over under. I think if I was Vegas, I'd set it at 8 because then they'd be like, oh, these guys again. But I mean, 10, I'd be happy with 10 because that means we're making 20 good ones and they can only post 10.
Fair. If you're listening on YouTube, let us know what you got, the over, the under. I got the over, as I initially said, 20. But also I will be shilling them all to Izzy to post.
That's true.
If we put a bunny on it, I would totally be in cahoots there. Awesome. I'm stoked. Can you share just a minute of, where this came from?
Sure. Anthony this year just didn't know how much he could allocate time and energy to playing, which I totally understand. And me and Jarrett were in similar boats of, we were like, hey, we definitely think we can want to and can play another year. I don't remember who reached out to who. I want to say he reached out to me just letting me know that he was looking for a partner and he heard I was kind of in the market, and just knocked it off. Mm-hmm. And we were like, this makes sense. We both want to make another run at Spikeball Elite and a couple SRA tour stops and a national championship potentially. So we thought this is our time to play a whole season together. And we're excited. Yeah.
Did you guys think about this before you guys played in March?
Yes, we did think about it beforehand, but I would say when we initially signed up to play the tournament together, it was not the thought. Mm-hmm. But as we were getting closer to the tournament, we were like, well, we could treat this as like a first date you know.
Yeah, get to know each other a little bit.
Yep. And then since then, just getting the announcement was kind of pushed back, just making sure we got, you know, name, jersey, all that kind of stuff, logo and stuff ready. Mm-hmm. And yeah, we got knotty because of our top knots. Mm-hmm. He just got married, so we both tied the knot recently. And now we just want to make some naughty plays, like naughty plays. Now it's not going to be disgusting or nasty. It's going to be naughty.
Naughty. There's layers. You're telling me there's layers.
There's always layers to a good team name.
There's layers. Okay.
Except for rookies. That's just punny.
That's just simple. You're just the rookies. You're just the rookies. All right. Well, I'm stoked. I am more excited than I guess I anticipated being just reading a team announcement, but I'm very excited, especially to see just what happens this season, because it's been a year and a half off, new rules, everything. Excited. But anyway, that's not what this podcast is about. This is about history. So that's talking about 2021. We are going to go back way before that. And there's tons of stuff we're going to get to, but we have to start at the way beginning, which was your first interaction with RoundNet.
So my first interaction with RoundNet, I saw on some random Instagram account, one of those 2013 type of beautiful destinations or random spam account that you followed when you were in high school. Mm-hmm. I saw just like Spikeball as an advertisement, and me being an avid random game, lawn game type person, I was like, this looks kind of fun. Went to YouTube, watched the 2 hours of videos that they were on there, because it was literally only an hour and a half to 2 hours of videos in 2013. And that, of course, included the ever classic Chico Beavers, wherever that Mount something. And they're on a sand volleyball court and they're playing against each other. It's like the oldest video of them playing. And it used to have that classic rock, not classic rock, but it's the rock song about take me off to Boston, or one of those type
shipping
of
like, up to Boston.
I think it's one of those or something like that. And it was just, I think the music's now taken down for some copyright reason, but either way. So I watched the videos and I was like, all right, I got to try this out. This looks way too much fun. So that was like March of 2013. And then my birthday's at the end of April. So I was like, all right, Mom, got my birthday present. I know one thing I want.
Yep.
She was like, easy. I'm hard to shop for. She bought it right away.
Perfect.
Got it on April 30th. And then all of May. So I was graduating high school that May. I started playing with Tyler Chizik and then a few other close friends that were on the soccer team with me. And we, for like the next month, we were like, wow, this game is so fun. Who else plays this? We got to compete against somebody else than just like the four of us, the eight of us, whoever. So we looked up on Google Spikeball tournaments and Summer Spike came up, and that was the first ever Summer Spike in 2013, which was like the next month in June. I think it was like late June.
Yeah.
We were like, all right, we're going, we have to go. So we go that day, we see Chico Beavers, people we had seen in videos there. And we were like, this couldn't get any better. Mm-hmm. This is amazing. So we go, me and Tyler played together as the rookies. We didn't wear these jerseys that I'm wearing now. We wore like our St. John's soccer t-shirts or something. And I think we have those videos are so old. Like Drew wasn't even posting videos yet. I have that video, like a 5-minute video from that day on like Dropbox or something like that from somebody that I don't even know where it is. Like it comes up every couple of years when I really dig deep for it. Mm-hmm. But we played like these, it was pools of four. So we had three games against like three different opponents. We went 2-1, losing to this one team called PK Faya, which you might recognize the name. They're like an old New York City team. And then we ended up playing them in the round of 16. There was like 50-something teams there. There might have been, I think there was two divisions, like intermediate and advanced, which was like crazy for that time.
Yeah.
And that was also the day Chris Reuter was there and quit his job. He was like, I'm going full-time Spikeball. And we were there, and we were like, this is cool. Like, we're like,
yeah, you're in it.
For a first tournament, this is insane.
Yeah.
Because most people just go to like a random park and just like Dylan said, have eight teams for their first tournament. Not like,
yeah, you went to the biggest tournament of all time.
The first inaugural one, the inaugural biggest tour. Yeah.
Yeah.
So then we beat PK Faya in the round of 16. This was also, the rules weren't rally scoring. It used to be score on your serve, and it was games to seven.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember somehow we won game one in like pretty close, but game two, we were down 6-5 for like literally 15, 16 straight points. Mm-hmm. Like it was because it all holds. And then we got a break, made it 6-6, and it's not win by two when it's on your serve. And it was 6-6 for like another 8 points. And then we beat them 7-6. Mm-hmm. And it was just like, let's go, like get over the hill.
Yeah.
Because in the round of eight in the quarters, we versed Chico. And we were like, this is insane. We get to verse.
You just watched them on YouTube and now we're playing.
We watch them on YouTube. We're like, how do we size up against these guys? Maybe we'll watch them. And then we got to play them. And we play it. I just remember we started off the game. Right before we started the game, I tightened the net because I was like, I look at Sean or Skyler and I was like, yeah, this is how we play.
you took control.
All right, we'll give it a shot. Like, it's a little tight. They're how we play. Like, they were just like, whatever, we're going to beat these guys. We start out the game and somehow it's like 2-2 or something like that. Like, it's, we actually get a break. Like, so then at that point, I remember Sean's like, we're going to loosen the net. It's a little too tight. So they beat us like 7-3, 7-4, mm-hmm. which like really isn't that.
It's hearing that you talk about this is just such a foreign concept. Like the tournaments I went to. Oh, so truthfully, early tournaments were played like that also.
Yeah.
And it's so funny to think back now that like that is how we played. And those games could last 3 minutes or 45.
Yep. It's so true. And I remember we lost the game and we go back to the main tent to either report it or just like get out of the sun. And Chris Reuter was just standing there. He was the only one. He was like, oh, how'd you guys do? We were like, oh, we lost 7-4, 7-3. He's like, wow, that's pretty good. Like, no, he was like low key impressed. And then I started talking to him because I was like, I want to run a tournament. How do I do this? And he gave me like one of his business cards, which like, I wish I could just find somewhere in like my apartment or something like that. But he gave me a business card. He was like, here's my email. Like, email me. I'll help you. Maybe I'll send a couple sets. And I was like, oh, this is incredible. And then we watched the finals. And that was, of course, it was Tezzy in the semis, just like Dylan said last week. Mm-hmm. Tezzy was a traveling champ and unbelievable at that time of a player. And then they versus Beavers in the finals, played three games. And it was like 7-0, 7-2, 7-1 or 7. And I just remember leaving. We were like, we took the most points from Chico. Like the whole day. Like that was like, one, it was amazing to play Chico. Two, it was like, we got as far as we could.
Mm-hmm.
And we got to meet Chris. It was like a perfect day.
Incredible day, right?
Incredible day overall.
You're feeling great.
The friends that came with us, I think they played Beavers or something in pool play and got wrecked. And then they lost in like round of 32 or something like that. But like, we were just like stoked to like get a close win. Like, and from then on, then I ran a tournament a month later. At my town and just invited like my friends and like my soccer team and whatnot. We got 16 teams right on the head, which was great. And me and Tyler won against like two random guys that showed up from the island who we had never talked to before. So we were like, oh, there's more people who play around here. But like from then on, those were my only two tournaments of 2013. Not like there was a ton to choose from, but a ton of stuff changed as the next year went on.
2014 was very different. I want to ask, I don't know if this was 2013 or 2014, but I remember watching on your or Drew's YouTube channel years ago, some tournament where I think you and Tyler went, but it wasn't your friends. You just went to like a random group's tournament. Does that ring any bells?
Yeah. That was 14 or 15. We went, it was one of those can't miss opportunities where there was these local guys who were probably in like their 30s running $20 a person, winner take all. So that's like $40 a team. There was like 20 teams. It was all these guys from one small town. And it was only like 25 minutes from our house. We were like, we kind of knew them from Instagram or like they came to something we ran. I forget the connection, but like, we were like, oh, we're going, we're signed up. And like, they were talking smack the whole day. Like everyone in the crowd was rooting against us because it was a hometown thing.
Yeah.
And we're like these two like young kids coming
two
in.
Two hardos, like, they probably think, right?
They ended up like being like, all right, we took out some money for pizza. Like at the end, like, we bought pizza for the guys, like drinks. We were like, all right, we just want to get out of here with the cash. Like this is, we're like, 19 years old, and here's like a bunch of 30-year-olds just like taking this way more serious. Like, we took it serious, but like, there's a difference of like 30-year-olds playing pickup basketball and like 19-year-olds.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right. Yeah.
So we won like $500, and we were like, "This is amazing.
Yeah.
This couldn't be a cooler day."
That's great. I just, for some reason, that's just planted in my memory, because it just was, it just felt so cool. Like, you guys go to a tournament and do well. And like,
well, the classic, like, Chico in the morph suits. We were like, someone's got to do that. But like, we didn't dress up because like they knew it was us. And it's not like we're going to take out the morph suits and be like, "Oh my gosh, that's the rookies." They'd have been like, "Okay, you're just two random kids."
Well, those are the guys that lost 7-3 to Chico at Summer Spike.
Yeah, right. Exactly. They did their research.
Yeah. All right. Well, so, yeah. So 2013, we were just playing. So really 2014 is kind of what I talk about. The big one was, and the first time I saw you guys, I met Drew or your dad, whoever went, because I remember talking to him and he was like, "Yeah, those are that's my son over there. We play down on Long Island all the time." And I distinctly remember that. But so 2014 Boston Grand Slam, this was the kind of first ever spike ball tournament, really the first ever spike ball tournament. I think Boston was first, I believe. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe, I don't know.
If we're going to classify it as maybe like a tour stop or some type of,
or
like
the Grand Slam, yes.
Maybe the first event of a series in a year.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, I think that's fair to say.
So first thing, Spikeball was like, "Hey, we're going to have these three Grand Slams." And of course the rookies traveled to this one. Can you tell me about that day?
So it was some day in May, not May, I think it was April, I remember, in Boston. I was at school in Pennsylvania at Messiah College, and Tyler was on Long Island, and we both drove separately. I think, you know what, I might have came home because my parents went too, so maybe they would have driven separately as well. I don't remember. But basically, we went up, and it was like right in the middle of Harvard, like right in, like, right between buildings.
It's like
in
a quad. But
it was really cool. It was a really cool location for a small, but really in, like, small at the time numbers wise, but like it felt big because it was big. There was like 30 teams or something like that.
Yeah.
And we went in like pretty confident, being like, "All right, we're going to compete for this. Maybe we won't beat these California guys who we don't know, but like, we feel like we could be the best in New York right now. Like, we just did really well at Summer Spike." This was now almost a year later.
Yeah,
we'd been playing like at home. Like, I went to school in the fall, but I was teaching people how to play just to like get touches in and like just explain the game and have fun. And then Ty was also playing with a bunch of hometown people, and we went there. I don't remember pool play honestly at all, and I'm 99% sure it was rally scoring at this time, which then became like the standard to 21. And I just remember we versed the tournament hosts, the Harvard guys, in the quarters. Mm-hmm. And we had a three-game series that was really tight and very controversial. And there was like a couple plays that literally, like, we argued for like 5 to 10 minutes on a point. We had we had people watching that agreed with us, and the kid was still like, "No," like more like, "I'm running this tournament" type of mindset. And we're like, that was like, I don't even remember what the controversy was. Maybe Tyler would, but either way, we ended up pulling out the close game. We were like, "Thank God." That would have been the worst to like lose a close game on.
Yeah.
And then we versed Neville and what is his name?
I don't even know.
I know you don't need to know. It's more frustrating because I follow him on social media still. He has a very unique name, but maybe I'll remember it later. But either way, I versed Neville and another New York City kid, and they just thrashed us. We were just not
really.
Ready. Yeah, they absolutely dominated us. The kid who I'm forgetting the name of, he was the first one I ever saw do a pivot serve. So he stood.
Yes.
And
yes,
then he stood and, yes, and hit it sideways. And we were just like, "You can't do that." And he was like, "Actually, you can."
Yep.
And then we're like, "Okay, actually, you can." Like, we're
That's how it went.
Neville's wearing a Summer Spike shirt. Who am I to say don't know the rules?
Yep, exactly.
Like, you ran the tournament. Okay. Yep. Like, so they beat us pretty fair. It was like 21-13, maybe both of them. And
yeah,
we were just like,
that makes me
again,
feel better.
Again, we walked out Well, then again, we played, I don't even think we played a fourth place game. I think the team was just like, we just watched your game. Like, you're better. Like, we didn't, like it was just like, take it. We're tired. We're tired. Just you take it. I think it might have been that, or it was just like a blowout or something. But we ended up taking third. And of course, a happy third, because we were like, we lost to a better team. Like, again, like, we're not losing a close game where we have like super high regrets. Like, we have, you know, something to look forward to. And of course, then when we saw Neville lose in the finals to McCarthy and
Sam.
Yeah. And Sam, we were just like, oh, okay. That's another level too. So that's where we have the classic picture of, but the story goes on. So this quad in Harvard, I have to mention, had like no grass. It was just dirt.
It was just dirt.
Like, yeah, honestly, it's dirt.
And not level.
And not level at all either. So I just remember walking away. We were just like we were handicapped. Mm-hmm. Like it was, we couldn't move.
Yeah.
And I wasn't injured the whole day, but we got back to our hotel. I'm grabbing my bag out of the trunk. And when I turn my body after I grab my bag, I twist my knee. And I was like, I like tweaked my knee as I'm turning away from, because I just didn't move my feet. My body was tired. And I'm just like, are you kidding me? You play spike ball for 7 hours today and don't get injured and you get hurt. You twist your knee getting a bag out of the car. Like, it was just one of those moments like that. That was like the first time. It was like an all day. My body's exhausted. It was on grass. The other ones I played were either we won comfortably or it was on sand.
Right.
So like, that was just, that was the funny part of the day when I injured myself. That's funny. At the end of the day. Like,
I want to say hearing you lost to them makes me feel better, because we played them in pool play and got beat pretty bad. And I was feeling terrible, but kind of the opposite, where I was like, well, so I think this is what I want to ask you about. They were the first team I ever played against. You played against Chico, so you know differently. Yeah. They were the first team that like hit it away from us and pulled it back towards themselves. And similarly to the pivot serve, we were like, you can't do that. You're kind of being a jerk. Like it was super early, but I remember thinking that for Neville and his partner, is they were so good. They would set it and hit it back between them, which, you know, obviously nowadays, you know, that's the hit. But back then they did that and we had no idea what to do. And we're like, and obviously they were so much better than us just for doing that.
I, you know what, when you say that, I'm trying to like replay it in my mind. And I do remember feeling like they were just setting each other to just like hit it away from us and low and with good pace. And we were still at that level where we knew how to put the ball away, kind of like at that time, put the ball away. Like,
yeah.
But it was a lot more about like fake, like, cause we're watching Chico videos, you're faking and then dropping, or like you're hitting through somebody kind of. So we would like try to do our drops and they were just like all over it and then hitting it away from us. And we were just like, okay, like we need to learn this game. Like, we're playing our game.
It was, I think, you know, you had the good mindset of like, these guys are better than us, but I was kind of just like, wow, I feel like I've played a lot and these guys are like way better than us. Right. And it was cool. And then so immediately I remember all summer, because I think that was like the only tournament I played in that summer. And we would always be like, because we thought, we didn't really like it that they would hit away from us, because we wanted to play. We weren't very good at it. But I remember like we would all secretly, like when Al and I were playing Nick and Shane, like if one of us was winning, the other would like try to hit it away from them. Like, we never did it instinctually. And then at a certain point, obviously we were like, okay, this is just how you play. But I remember there were a couple months after that tournament where we were like, we know this strategy, but we think it's kind of like not sportsmanlike, and we didn't do it. But then eventually we did, which was pretty funny.
That is funny. I like that.
And where you're just playing with your friends.
But we didn't even meet that day. Yeah, you said you met Drew. I think the first time I saw you was probably on one of those YouTube videos you posted from like a highlight reel from a tournament. It was like Manchester. It was like Natick Classic or something like that.
The gray one. So I want to say I'm upset now, because I think we went three games with the Harvard guys. So therefore we would have played in the quarters.
You know what? I think you're right. Cause I remember watching their game and being like, who do you think is going to win? And we were like, you know, I think you're right. I think that was 16. That's funny.
So
did you play close to the hill?
We played we played right on the sidewalk. We kept on the bottom side, you know, the hill. The hill with the parking lot.
Yeah.
We were all the way at the bottom on the sidewalk.
That sounds so ridiculous to people.
Yes. Well, guys, this field was literally like 50 by 50. Like it's like a Harvard's in a city. It's
perfect to run like a five net like pickup session, not a tournament.
Nowadays, like three, maybe.
Maybe three, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. And we wouldn't even play because it's dirt.
Because it's dirt.
But that's funny. And so we met. So, I mean, not we met, but yeah, you saw us in the Natick highlight video, which also at the time we did side out scoring. And to 21 in a double limb tournament. Terrible.
That's brutal.
I think that was the last time, like, it just went on forever. Like, the fact that we, like, won in, like, a reasonable amount of time is, like, the dumbest thing.
That's crazy.
Anyway, so after that, really, there were the other Grand Slams, but you guys didn't go. But, of course, regionals came up later that year.
Yeah.
And lucky for you, that was on New York. Was that an easy send?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was a no-brainer for us. At that time, by that time, we felt like we had been playing all summer. I ran a Long Island tournament. Try to remember. I can only identify them by like the videos that I did. Yeah, we ran a Long Island tournament and we played. I think it was either sets on the beach or unprotected sets. It was these guys who wore these Hawaiian mm-hmm. jerseys, and they were good.
They were good.
And then we had played Jack Scotty and met Jack at that tournament and met him a little earlier just through New York connections. And mm-hmm. There was like New York City Spikeball. That was like the only other New York like Spikeball account. Yeah. And then there was Long Island. I created Long Island Spikeball just to like the same reason, just try to connect people.
Yeah.
And, so we went there like feeling good. We were like, we think we're number one in New York now. We knew about Ian and Larkin through something. We were like, these are our biggest, this is our competition.
Mm-hmm.
Power pools weren't invented yet. So again, you just had to beat teams as best, like as nicely and best as you could to get the best point diff. And what happened was, I think Jack Scotty's team got the one seed by a couple points and we ended up getting seeded against.
Shout out Jack.
I think it was Jack's team. And we ended up getting seeded against,
it was Team USA.
I think it was Team USA. It was Team USA.
Yeah.
And then we got seeded against Ian and Larkin in the semis, in which mm-hmm. both of our teams were just like annoyed because we were like,
wanted to be in the finals, right?
Yeah.
And only one can make the power pool. So at the time, you're fighting for top three. Did you know that? You doing that? Were you like planning on going to nationals?
We were not planning on going to nationals. We were thinking about it, but we were like one thing at a time. You know, like California sounds crazy when the only tournaments you've been to is New York, and Boston.
Right.
And so we had a really close three-game series. That was the first, as you know, I'm going through, that was the first time we lost a series where we were like, wow, we really thought we should have won that series.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a heartbreaker because in game one, we won. Game two, we had game point or match point. And in game three, we had match point and we mm-hmm. lost both of those in extras. And it was just a heartbreaker. And that, again, was another series where we lost. Ian and Larkin are playing Team USA, and it was pretty one-sided finals. And then there was a team from New Jersey who came in second or got lost in the other semifinal. And they literally were like, we don't want to play you guys. We just watched. Like, you guys take. We didn't even have to play for third for the power pool. They gave us third. Like, we were like, we'll play. Like, we want, like, at any time you lose, you're annoyed. You, like, want to play. You want to get
a win, right?
Out.
Yeah.
And, yeah, that was a tough one. But we got third. We were like, all right, we got the power pool, whatever. And then Thomas Summers convinced us to go to California. He was like, we have all eight. You'd be the ninth one. We need all nine. Mm. We need all three from each three regions. And we were like, it was literally 3 weeks before nationals. We were like, all right, let's just do it. Let's just go to California. Like, you know, what the heck?
Yeah.
And I mean, we got on the little videos they did and we had a good day. And crazy that power pool was just a 15. It was one game. No, one game, two,
11?
One game to 11.
Probably won't do 11. Eight games. 1 to 11.
And a few of those are up on Drew's or now HTR Plus channel. And it was a fun day. And we ended up getting revenge of having a close loss in regionals and got to the semis through Life of Mar. Oh, it beat Strange Embrace, who we didn't know was going to become, of course, who they became.
Yeah.
And in the Sweet 16 to get, because top eight was just our goal. We were like, we could be Spike Ball Elite. Like, this sounds sick. Like, top eight team in the country. Mm-hmm. And then we had heard Life of Mars won the region and we played them in pool play and won at the cap 15-14 or something like that.
Or 11.
We were like,
oh, yeah.
All right, these guys are good. Like, yeah. And then we won a close game one and blew them out game two. It was like, somehow we just caught fire and won like 21-10.
Yeah.
And then after we won, we were just like, we're in the top four.
Like, yeah. Like, what?
This is unbelievable.
Yeah.
And at that time, I don't think Dylan even mentioned this when he was going through the 2014 Nationals, but it was like, everyone knew Chico was probably going to win, but they knew it had to be Chico Beavers, to be fair.
Right.
So we played the semifinals to 15. Because the sun was going down and they wanted to have time to go to the finals.
So you just did it one day, one game?
We did two games to 15 instead of the 21, as did Nashburg and Beavers.
Yep.
Which, like, to us, we were like, we want to play Chico, but at the same time, we're like, hey, if there's a time to win, it's going to be the shorter game.
Yeah, right. Take
but
it.
But they handled us. Yeah. It was very one-sided. And, yeah. The only close game that day that I guess we were like frustrated was like Nashburg beat us and we were like, they were probably better, but we could have like, we had a close two games with them. We were like, that's the team we had our eye on. And of course the next 2 years we were, Nashburg was like in our,
it's like Nashburg was a rival for a long time.
It was a rival. They were our touchable. Like we weren't up there with Chico and Beavers. And of course then Origin got to that point where they were traveling enough to be in that echelon.
Yep.
But it was, that was a fun day.
You're talking right into some questions I got prepared for later. Maybe we'll get right into. But that's interesting. Like Nashburg was such a rival in so many different ways, right? Yep. Like the push back and forth. Anyway, I'm going to go to a less chronological, more of a question. A lot of people to step us in a new direction. Many people, I just want to say, like early in the day, right? I'm sure you, as well as many people, obsessively would go on YouTube, look for highlight videos and all that stuff. And nowadays, people probably look up to you as a player. But back then, were there people that you were looking up to?
Yeah, I would say looking up to just like, I mean, I liked the way Chico played, but I think I looked to Skylar for like the thing that drew me and Tyler to the game was not just the athleticism, but it was the outsmart. It was the cheekiness. It was like, I can get you on a drop shot. Mm-hmm. It was this whole, I'm not going to just prove, I'm going to be the better athlete because I'm going to be smarter and more, more deceptive. It was the deception. That mind game. And that, I think that's why people catch the bug of spike ball. I remember like people still find
the bug,
it.
Now, yeah.
That all I want to play for the first 2 months of me hearing and playing spike ball is spike ball. Cause it's like, you're trying to figure it out. Like all you're doing is figuring it out.
Yep.
And, I looked up to Skylar for sure. Definitely buddy's just crazy gets and athleticism. We're just like anything that, I mean, you just makes your jaw drop. Watching him, but just like even back in the day when there's less people to watch, it was just that couple videos over and over. And I'd say those two the most. As the years went on, it was less looking up and more, what is somebody, you know, now they're peers because now I'm competing against them at, you know, tournaments that I think I can win. So it's looking at people and saying, how can I serve as well as, how can I be, you know, as good at defense as this person, you know, like body positioning. And it was more looking for tips than it was like at the first, you know, 2 years looking up to somebody.
Mm-hmm. And then, so Drew, I want to get into like that transition, but we can just talk about kind of the transition. So 2015, right. That's when the tour series really happened. And I mean, the rookies were decently well-traveled for the time. I remember...
We were known. But yeah, getting you were fourth known. The Nationals was big for us because any team that wasn't from the East that, like, kind of just saw the name, now we were, like, established ourselves not just as a top eight, but, like, all right, this is they got top four. Like, respect. Like, even though it was kind of... You can go back and say it was unfair for elite teams to get the top nine or whatever. Like,
whatever.
You still earned it in some degree to get that fourth place. Right. You had to.
Sure. And then, I remember, 2015, people didn't know each other. There was so much talk. Obviously, so the first time we met was at Camp Birchill 2015. Yep. But I remember going into that, the storyline was kind of like, how's Fitzy going to be after his study abroad? Because we had some good teams there. We had Ball Blasters coming in, David Gonzalez playing with Cole, Chubby Bunny. But I remember the thing was, rookies got fourth at Nationals. Fitzy's been gone for a long time. How are they going to be? Yep. And I remember you guys, if I remember correctly, you guys weren't as pleased. You also wanted to win that tournament, didn't you?
Oh, yeah. That's another... It wasn't a heartbreaker in the sense of, like, because it was a close score of some degree, but it was one where I literally, most people wouldn't know who's watching this, but my sophomore year of college, so that's 2015, that whole from January through the beginning of May, I studied abroad in Thailand. So, like, I had my set there, just like any spike ball enthusiast would. I was trying to get people to play and teach them how to play, and whether it was the students I was with or, like, Thai people there, I was hitting against the wall all the time, just trying to a person who's just itching to just compete and play sports. So if it was just like nobody wanted to do anything, I was outside just hitting the ball around. But literally the day after I got back on a Friday night in DC, the next day I played at a Virginia tournament with my sister. It's like, really? That's the first day I actually met Peter John. And it was one of those, the RCA tournaments. I think it was the day Bolivia somehow pulled out.
RVA tournaments.
Yeah. I think it was the one that
Bolivia kind of
beat Origin
on the map.
I actually left for the finals because I was like, this is going to be a blowout. And then I heard later that day, I was like, what? Bolivia won? Like, what the heck? But that was, I lost to Ian and Jenna, who I was like, oh, my sister was pretty, she was a volleyball player at the time. Yeah. She was really into it. And I was like, maybe we could beat them. Like at that time, they were like, they're the co-ed team. Mm-hmm. And it was like, you know, we held our own with them, but it wasn't close enough. Yeah. But either way, that next weekend was Camp Birchill already. So I was just like, boom, boom. We went into it pretty confident. And we had our new jerseys for being spike ball elite. And we lost to, I forget who we played in quarters, to be honest. You know what? It might have been like Corey Heck and Micah or something like that. Or Corey Heck and...
Yeah, perhaps Corey Heck and Micah played.
Like, it was somebody with it. That was good, but we were like, all right, we got to get past these guys. And then Chubby Bunny gave us, I think it was three games, or it might have been two really close ones. I want to say it was three. And they beat us, and we were just like, dang, like, another close loss. We hadn't really had a close win because regionals was a close loss. Nationals, we won the games we should, lost the games we probably should.
Yeah.
And then... So that one hurt, and we took third over somebody, I forget. But that one was just like, all right, I lost, time to grind back into it. Like that was a wake up call. Like, all right, you got to earn every tournament, you know?
Yeah.
But that was for a lot of like me, I don't want to put words in people's mouths, but like that tournament, not just being because of camp, but like how many OG ballers I met and I'm still friends with just from that one day is like, actually unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And like the impact of literally a 48 hour type of tournament, like at a camp in New Hampshire, like meeting you, David, like AK, like all like so many different groups of ballers in the league that just ended up connecting for the past 6 years of like still being involved.
Ian's gonna send me a text after, loving that we kept talking about camp, but we're eternally grateful to Ian for putting that together for all of us and for doing so much for the sport.
And it became the next 3 years of like one of the biggest tournaments every year to compete, not just to be at.
Yeah. So to kind of very quickly kind of summarize, you know, the rest of your year as the rookies, I don't think you guys actually played too many of the the tour stops because you missed Summer Spike, obviously. You missed Summer Spike. You went to Chicago, though you guys got third there, right, and lost to Chico.
We also went to Lancaster and lost in the finals. You're right, Lancaster, you lost in the finals. Which that game three doesn't exist on YouTube, unfortunately.
Really?
Yeah, Jenna had it and then like somehow lost it. And Drew didn't get it because his camera died. And that's where the rally is actually from. It's from that game three.
And I remember it was
at like sixes or sevens. And then, but either way, so it was Lancaster one and then Chicago. We got to the semis, finals.
You lost to Chico in the semis and then beat us. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. With one arm, Nick.
We gave Nick a terrible set and he threw out his arm.
That was impressive though. Nick held his own for literally. He served lefty and hit lefty the whole game. And it was like 21-15.
Yeah.
And we crushed it because we had to catch a flight at like 7 p.m.
But I remember I refused.
Reason.
I'm like, I'm not giving the rookies another third place. They have a pattern of just taking third places. You guys booked a flight because you're like, we're not going to play our third place.
We did it before it was controversial.
Yeah. But so what I'm kind of get at, right? Like, you lost a camp to Chubby Bunny, lost to Origin Elite in the finals, had another semis to Chico, and then regionals, you guys got second at regionals that year, losing to Nashburg. And kind of what you were getting at and where I wanted to go was, did it feel like the rookies were kind of just stuck at that, I want to say just that second tier? Like, you know, that's kind of when I'm recapping, that's kind of what I'm feeling, where the rookie were up there, but just right there.
Yeah, I think there was literally 5 to 6 players that we just had problems playing against for whatever reason. And when you think of the rookies, you think on the podium, but not in the middle. You know what I mean? You think on the power ranking fourth, fifth, sixth, third if they had a good month, you know what I mean? Like, and some of it's because we didn't travel enough in a sense to like give ourselves enough opportunities, you could say. Mm-hmm. Because if you think Origin, like how many Dylan, I mean, looking back on his own, he's just like, I gave myself so many opportunities to win. I have 18 mm-hmm. mugs because I went to 40. Like, but also he was
right. I think if you guys went to 25 tournaments in 2015, I think you probably would have broken into that top group.
And you look at the team, look at the teams we lost to. We lost to Chico. We lost to Origin. Like Chubby Bunny was the close one. Like the other two. I
mean, Chubby was a top 5 team at the time.
A top 5 team. Origin, we were right there in game 3 and like they were new. And the first time we versed some two guys who could blast the ball, we were used to running down balls and we were just like, this is impossible. We got to figure out some kind of different kind of defense. This is insane.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But then of course, nationals or regionals, we lost to 2015 must have been Nashburg.
Yeah.
And that was in the finals. Mm-hmm. And I was like, we were looking forward to playing and maybe beating them after the nationals beforehand. But we were happy to get to the finals. Cause we were like, we belong in the finals with them.
Right.
But of course, coming up short always stinks.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So we can talk 2015 Nationals, at least very briefly. I know you've been not really talked to death. We don't talk too much about your incredible quarterfinals match, which was the match of the day there. But truthfully, I kind of want to get into like after that season. Obviously you and Tyler are both competitive. Like we're in this and in many other cases, would you guys go into days as like, we can win this? Or were you always kind of like setting certain goals? Like let's get top 4, let's get top 8, let's get top 2.
So I'm very analytical in that way where I can like, I think some people things hit them in the moment. Like, if it's a match, like right away, they're so mad afterwards where I'm trying to rationalize it. And then maybe later that night or like a few days later, then I'm just like really bummed or like I'm mad at myself. Like it delays. I try to like rationalize early. So like at a tournament, usually what I would say to Ty, and he, kind of meet in the middle, I would be like, all right, what's our satisfaction level? And then like after that, like what, so like say we're at like a big tournament in 2016, I'm like, we need to get to semis, and then after that, whatever happens, happens. Mm-hmm. But like if we don't get the semis, we're not gonna be happy. Right. Like no matter what happens, whoever we lose to, we're gonna mm-hmm. be mad about something how we didn't get. So like I think that would be usually the terms I would say is like at Nationals at 2015, it was like, we got to get to quarters. And then like, of course we want to win, but like at what stage in the tournament are we going to walk away and be like, ah, got away from us. Or are we going to be like, I can't believe that happened. And so, maybe that's not a good enough competitive mindset to be like, a loss is a loss no matter when it is. Right. But that's how I look at it. I mean,
some people have that, but I also see it's totally fair of like, right? Chubby Bunny at that same tournament, right? They go, we want to get top eight, right? Or say top four, but it's like, okay, we got top eight and we lost to Chico. Okay, cool. But for you guys, I'm sure you were probably thinking, we got top eight. Oh, but we lost to Strange. So not feeling good about that. I don't want to harp on your things, but I feel like, at the time, I know you guys were really trying, and I think the vibe was you really wanted to have that, especially it being such a close match.
We were playing really well that day. We beat Chico in pool play, first time we ever beat them. We were like, this is insane. We beat Strange Embrace. We beat a couple teams. I know we lost to Origin, but that might have been our only loss, maybe to somebody else. I think we played each other.
I think we beat you.
You might have beat me. I don't remember.
I can't really remember. But
either way, we got the two seed. So
probably not.
If I we think got you the probably, two seed, probably we just probably lost. Only lost to Origin.
Yeah.
And then I think Safi got the not Safi. Monkey Business got the one.
Yeah.
And we were like, all right, we got the one and the two. Let's go.
Yeah.
So we were just hyped to like beat Chico, have a pretty good morning. And I think Origin was our first game. So after our first game, we ran the table.
Yeah.
Or did well at least. And it's just I think we had good feelings about our road that we set up for in pool play, and just, you know, it was a tough one. It was a tough one going into that quarters. We won game one. Even after game two, it was like, all right, they're playing well. Like we made mistakes, we can correct this. And then the classic game of literally it's really cool to watch on YouTube and like reflect. And I was really happy to be a part of like such an iconic game and big tournament.
Yeah.
Just watching it go from like daylight to now it's nighttime and everyone's watching. And there was some crazy holds and big breaks and things like I'd get a touch on something, but we couldn't convert and Tyler would get a drop. And the way it ended was pretty crazy. And just like looking back on how the rules have changed of like, I'm trying to play a serve that like I'm barely getting to.
Yeah.
And then I don't say anything because I don't want to lose on getting Evan mad at me. And it was like, and then, but it was pretty cool. That was one of the first games I think I had observers because because Strange at that time was, I think you could put him similar to Dylan of like, they were new. They were hungry to win. They're very competitive and like no one's going to get in their way. Like you're not going to make a call and not hear it. Like they're not going to just agree with you.
Right.
And so we were like, hey, Dill, hey, Ian, can you watch our games? Like make sure the calls, and they did a great job. Like great job. And I think the tough thing with any team that is stuck at that quarterfinals spot, at least pre maybe 2019, we're like, oh, play for fifth, whatever. Getting to semis, if you lose, you get to take your frustration out and you always have the hope of getting third. When you lose in quarters, especially in a really close game, your day goes from being 2 hours longer to done.
It's done.
And that sucks. That is the worst. I think that's the worst feeling, is not even losing finals like that, because you played as long as you could.
Yeah.
Like you could just blame one point. But like when you lose in quarters, by that one point or whatever it is, you have to think about it for two more hours while the games you're watching the team that you think you should be playing.
Right.
And I've had enough close quarters losses, not just nationals wise, but other things where I've, it makes you hungry to come back for another tournament, another season, to break, to have that And, you know, you work hard enough, you do have those special days where you win those close matches and you win those. Mm-hmm. But I think one thing of how many tournaments I've had, like, I really need to remember and appreciate the close matches I've won just as much as the losses, because it's so easy to remember the way the day ended on a loss.
Yeah.
Like that tournament and Lank when I lost to Origin. Mm-hmm. We had a crazy close game with Chubby Bunny that day in quarters. Then mm-hmm. no one remembers we played Chubby Bunny because it was in quarters.
Yeah.
And like we were down like 3 point, like 2018 or something. Or like 2019.
I remember you guys had like a huge comeback.
It was a big comeback.
Yeah.
Like we were really happy.
It might have been even more drastic, like 2015 or something. Like, yeah.
It was a comeback. And yeah. And we won. And it was just like one, getting over the hump of losing to Chubby that month before, but it was still just like remembering how hard you're working for the wins. That's what I don't want to go into the things you and Dylan talked about last week on mental health and round net and physical health. But one thing I would say is just like making sure when you're working hard, appreciate the close wins.
Yeah.
And let that feeling as much drive you as that competitive edge when you lose.
And how I feel about that is, I noticed it when I would go to Smash Bros tournaments, because there's double elim and obviously there's like, and with that, right, I would go and I don't do well because I'm not very good, but a quarter of the people go 0-2, right? A quarter of the people don't win, right? And so, and like half of the people, I think, go like 1-2. And like that perspective changes so much. And in this example, it reminds me, like, every single team in a division except for one has a loss.
And so the animal,
right? So if you're focusing on the loss, right, what else is there? Can only one team be happy in a true competitive state? Maybe. But like we were talking about, that's very challenging.
We always set that satisfaction level to, at least in the back of our minds, mm-hmm. appreciate to what level we got in the tournament or whatever it was.
Yeah.
And then whatever after that is like, that's what we're playing for. We expect to get to this, our expectation, our satisfaction level.
Yeah.
And then what's past that, you know?
I set that with, I mentioned it with Dylan, but it's like, truthfully, when we had that, we're like, I wanted to get to quarters at Summer Spike, and we did. And then I completely checked out. Like I was like, right? And like that can happen. But yeah.
You got to stay. I mean, it's all about – that could definitely throw people off. And maybe that's gotten in my own head a couple times when I reach a semi and then I lose or something like that. But I don't know. I feel – that's just how my mind operates. I'd rather do that than be mad the whole day about how I'm not doing something, because then I'm just not enjoying the moment. You got to enjoy it. Sports.
Yeah.
You're, you know,
truthfully, I think it really, you know, I guess it depends on the day. When I think back to College Nationals 2017, I was not happy the whole day. Dan didn't smile once until we won. And, and that probably worked for us, but also that was the satisfaction level, right?
Yes, like exactly.
The satisfaction level.
And I think that's one of those things where you talk to CS, talk to Chico, even Dylan mentioned it, the weight of being the favorite, the mm-hmm. weight of winning. Like when you're expected to win, you have to have that mindset. And maybe that's why they check out in pool play, and like, they won't say they do, but like they're not going their bracket hardest because they know they have to save their mental mm-hmm. fortitude for the bracket, because that's what everyone's going to judge them off of.
Right.
Because it's easier to, it's so much easier to be an underdog.
It's
it's unbelievably,
I mean, again, we're talking the same stuff Dylan and I talked about, like, but that's why I hated 2016. Okay. We're a good team. We're in we're in like the top 15. Okay. We're just good now. We're expected to be good.
Think about Phenomabomb.
Right. Right. Exactly. Beating Phenomabomb, which is Ant's team.
Anthony Alvino and Cameron Chizik, Tyler's brother. Yeah. They went to like all the East Tour stops and they played me and Tyler in the round of 16 in three out of the four.
Yep.
And then played us in the quarters of the other one that they won their round of 16 game.
Mm-hmm.
And Cameron's just like, why am I traveling?
The season beating Strange.
Yeah.
Right. So everyone's like, okay, this team's really good. So they have the pressure. And then they play you guys every single event. Like,
it's just, you know,
yeah,
it's one of those where that's a really hard place to feel like you're getting better. but yeah. You're getting better just as equally as everybody else.
Yeah. Exhausting. So moving on and similar, right? So you and Tyler continued to play in 2016.
Yep.
Did you guys as a team, like with this satisfaction level, have like goals for the season, or are you just playing? Are you just like, let's keep playing?
I'd say in 2015 and 16, once we got Spike Ball Elite in 2014, we were like, this is a goal. We expect and we want to get Spike Ball Elite. And I think nearly every season but one, that the one that I didn't get, I mean, I was hoping to get it, but I knew I was getting married, Ant was getting married. Like, it wasn't my focus that year. Playing was just secondary. Mm-hmm. But all the other seasons, it's like a focus of, like, I want to be in the top eight. I want to, you know, get to at least quarters at nationals. I want mm-hmm. to win 1 to 2 events and podium at all the ones that I go to. I expect to. So it's coming up with a set of expectations of, like, I expect to win my Long Island, or, you know, we expect to do well at regionals to some extent, like mm-hmm. coming up each year, there's a new goal of, like, maybe there's Nashburg ahead of us. All right. We expect to be better than Nashburg. We expect to, you know, get elite. We expect, you know, coming up with, write them down, have them somewhere. You see them, say them out loud to somebody else. Saying them to somebody else really can hold you accountable, because mm-hmm. then you're not just having it in your head.
Would you, like, and Tyler and you and Ant do them together, or would you have separate stuff?
We would do them together and then eat. Like, I think the individual stuff was more like, I want to get better at serving this year. I plan on practicing serving. Or, like, I want to really work on my backhand flicks. Like, I want to, like, I think because each of us, that we're all thinking of things that's a hole in our game. Mm-hmm. So I think the individual stuff was more like skill-based, not like event-based.
Like, I'm thinking, like, what can I do to achieve these?
Right. What are the things individually that can help our team goals? Mm-hmm. I guess you could say, yeah.
Could you share a time when you didn't reach one of these goals and kind of how you felt postseason?
That's a good question. I think the 2015 losing to Nashburg at regionals, that was one goal. We wanted to win regionals that year after losing to Fluff the year before, getting third. We were like, we're the best. And then Nashburg moved, or they moved back to PA from Tennessee. So now they're included in the East, and we're like, oh, great. But we were like, all right, that's our challenge. And I think that was one where we were like, just fell short. And then that nationals, then falling just short again, we were like, we can't make this trend. Like, this can't, our legacy can't just be, we're such a good team that barely, and maybe that ended up a little bit, sometimes the team is just a collection of moments. It's just and the moments became sometimes Instagram rallies and YouTube rallies. And sometimes it's, oh, remember that time you barely lost, or remember that time you, like, you know?
Yeah. So I'm thinking here, and right, reflecting on the rookies, it is this kind of team, right, knocking at the door, stuck. And I guess my question, which I kind of answered thinking about it more, was like, the rookies seem like such a fan favorite team. And I think it really was that you were just, you guys, in some sense of it, were underdogs for your whole career.
Yeah.
And I think people just really, really love that, you know?
I think they drew to our style of play as, Tyler's a small dude. I'm not too tall. I'm like 5'11". And, like, we're both just athletes who like to dive around, and we'll keep the route. Like, we're not just putting balls away. Mm-hmm. So one is our style of play that people are drawn to be like, wow, that was so cool. That was, you know, I love the way you guys play. And mm-hmm. I think we marketed ourselves as underdogs, being the rookies, having mm-hmm. this sense of, like, we're just guys, you know, like, we're, so I think it was a little bit of our own style of play and marketing, but also our tournament results, where people were pulling for us because they wanted to see us achieve something that, like, they knew we were capable of, mm-hmm. you know? And sometimes we did have a crazy cool win and we won a tournament, or, you know, got past this team that we didn't think we'd get past. But then just with any good underdog, there's got to be a couple lows. There's got to be a couple like, oh, wow. You know, but that's loving your team. That's loving, you know.
That's sports.
Sports. So the next year we won regionals, and that was a huge high for us.
Is that what I'm thinking?
2016.
That was
huge. That was our first regionals, and that was, I think that was one of our crowning ones that we feel good about. We also wore our throwback jerseys that day.
Yeah.
And we beat Nashburg, and then I was in quarters because we were just like, screw this, we got to beat them. I think we were the one who did bad in pool play, and they were mad at us. And then beat Schweppes in two close games, and then beat Gubb in two close. I don't think we dropped a game. Now I'm thinking about it. I think we didn't drop a game, or maybe we went three with Nashburg, but either way. Winning that was a big one. That was one of those we'd been working since 2013 to like not just feel like we were the best in our area or in our region, but like prove it, you know?
And I think being there for both, it really was tangible, the growth. Like in my opinion, right, 2015, Nashburg did feel like, right, they were just a much better team.
Yeah.
And coming back the next year and you guys win solidly, and it's like, yep, the rookies are that next team. And even the win over Gubb was very solid as well.
Yeah. We were playing well that day, and I think it was just we wanted that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes you just get a tournament and you just want that tournament.
Yeah.
And that was one of them.
Yeah. But you could totally tell, right? Like that's where you guys came to play. And it's and truthfully, you've always come to play for East Regionals.
I like that tournament.
Yeah.
I like it's one of those where it's you get to say I'm this number, and that's a bummer for this season. I've always been I'm one of the biggest pushers, as you know, of like having a regionals tournament. Because I think it's really good for teams and marketing, and to just say I was the fifth best team in the East, because there's no state tournament. And people love this idea of not just being the best in the country, but like you're playing for states, you're playing for your region. Like it's in every other sport. So like I think it's cool to have region centric tournaments uniquely to say you're the best out of this specific geographic region.
I think that's also another reason that the rookie had a bit of a fan base, is you represented the East region. So
for sure.
Right. Yeah. Nowadays it would just be the Long Island guys hyping you up. But back then it was, they represent the whole East. And people still have that with the Southeast kind of thing. But back then it was really strong in the region pride.
Because Nashburg represented the Southeast as well as the East. So they weren't pure East.
Yeah.
So we were the main contenders to like prove the East for a while.
Yeah.
And Caleb Heck was still a baby.
Yeah. Caleb Heck. What a time. All right. Let's just move forward. Cause I want to get to 2017 here. And so 2017, talk about the rookies in past tense, of course, because the rookies split up after the 2016 season. Yep. And you joined Anthony Alvino as Anchored LI, who you've been with for the past 3 or 4 years, however you count it. And so obviously people at the time, Ant truthfully, well, so Ant was pretty unknown going into 2015, had some great success at the end. I remember when
he started playing that summer.
In 2015, I remember I went, it was like his second tournament, and he could hit it faster than anyone else. It was like, that's impossible to receive if he doesn't hit it over your head. But then he played with Phenoma Bomb, and then so you guys joined up. So can you share kind of like, I'm curious, were there other partners that you looked at? And then if so, or if not, how did you and Ant come together?
Yeah, I think... Ty told me, well, at the time I was still very involved in club soccer and school stuff. And he was kind of fading out of, he was fading out of, I don't know if I'm doing school, and he started working, and he just knew he wanted to play spike ball as much as possible. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want to play spike ball as much as possible, but I don't have the same amount of time and energy to travel as you do. And after the 2015 win with PJ and other like random tournaments he did, there was a connection, and they were really good friends. And you know, they were like, we want to play. I was like, all right, cool. And Ant was coming up, and 2015, as you said, he wasn't nearly a top five player on Long Island area. And then when he played with Phenomenal Bomb starting the year, I would have said Cameron was better. And then ending the year, I thought Anthony was better. And there was definitely, I was like, Ant was always that I could play with Ant, and I believe Ant could be better. But, you know, who, I think I talked to Drucker. There was a little Drucker conversation, but there was always this after I played and I kind of represented the East. I really felt like I wanted to train with and be with my partner. So this is the first year I'm not playing with someone from Long Island, which everyone, like my family, whatnot, they're like, how do you practice? I'm like, this is how everyone else does it. You
yeah,
know?
it seems to work for some. Yeah.
But at the, you know, like at the time it was even more crazy. Like yeah. That CS was just like, what do you mean? It's just, it wasn't right. Just like
the year
Chico
before when like
Chico
Gub was playing together, it was like, how are you guys playing together?
But right. it also, at the time, it was this step of like, you're not just playing with the local person or the person from your best friend or whatever. It was like, now it's becoming this point where you're competing and there's no more of this heartstrings attached to teams. It's, I think yeah. That's the number one guy. And I think that's the number two guy and I want to win. So we're going to play together. Mm-hmm. And there's no, you know, like that's how we're going to make teams.
It's no longer
it's based
I'm playing
on
with my best
how
friend.
Good,
yeah.
How good. And it was a little, I think it was a little toxic for a little bit because it lost this romance of like following a team now became to like just a year. And then it was like it's kind of like the NBA of like people yeah. love when Kobe and is just with the Lakers or, mm-hmm. but now it's a LeBron mentality. You get judged off your national championships. You get judged off of how many pitchers you win. How do you do that? You match up with the best next person possible. Mm-hmm. I didn't want to take that account. I kind of felt like I wanted to play with a Long Island guy and Ant was getting to that point where I was like, he's not going to slow me down. Like mm-hmm. he is, I might lead him, but there might be tournaments where he's going to pick me up. Mm-hmm. And that's how it was in 2017 for sure. He went from being, I don't even know if there was a top 40, but let's say he was on a top 30 list or honorable mention. And then the mm-hmm. next year he was like 15.
Yeah.
So he moved up significantly in people's minds from being a good player to like, This guy,
a great player.
He's a great player.
Yeah, that's interesting because I was thinking about that too. Where you're right, you've played on two teams in your whole career. Now going to be on three, and that's extremely different from a lot of players. And do you think that's kind of had an effect on how you view the game versus other people, or view the series, view competing?
I think it has to. I think I love the team aspect of RoundNet. And I think there's definitely I like the way that some teams are doing last names and I like it on a bracket sense and following players and when they're doing mashups, it can get confusing, but there's this sense of rooting for a team and a theme. And this, like, you know, mm-hmm. you could wear a jersey that just doesn't say last names. It's going to say like a team name. And and just the way I view RoundNet, I would say it has to have an effect. I mean, I played basically three seasons with Tyler. And then I played 4 years, three seasons with Anthony. Mm-hmm. So like it's crazy to see. And I talked to so many ballers. Like I was talking to Coleman Epperson a month ago. And he was like, I didn't even like know you and Tyler were partners. And like, that like blew my mind. Like so many like really good players today.
Yeah.
Don't know. They were just like, I just saw you as anchored. And I was like, I thought everyone, you know what I mean? Like
hey, you're getting to the point of this podcast right here.
Exactly. And that's why I love this podcast so much. Not because I love to just talk about old things just like you do and like run through, you know, old tournaments and history and whatnot. But it's also, I think it helps tell the story of a player and a team and a person.
Exactly.
Of just like how much work they've put into their game and like the sport as a whole.
Yeah. I think it really contextualizes, right? That if knowing Tyler as only Chizik Showalter, although that was an incredible, right? All-time era, it's a disservice to his career and his growth as a player and as a person, right? And then same for you, for Anchored, right? Anchored is extremely well known and has been in the past year, but to not know about the rookies era is something else. Yeah, for a lot of players, for a lot of players.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah. Don't have too much time here. I want to talk about, of course, the big thing in 2017. But we'll kind of start, like, when you and Ant started, again, you were similar to the rookies kind of in that outside kind of thing. Did you have goals around that, or was that your satisfaction level that year, kind of being in that 5-10 split?
I think going into that season was probably the first season in a couple of years where I was like, I'm going to have to work for Elite. But because the first 2 years it was one tournament based. So that's kind of, but 2016, right, it was points. And we were like, we want Elite, but like, we want more than that. We feel like we're number 4 or 5, not number 7 or 8. We're not a fringe team right now. Mm-hmm. But, you know, Tyler at that time was basically, I don't even know what voted player he was, but let's say he was 5. Like, right, everyone thought he was an amazing player. And then now I'm playing with Ant, who's up and coming, and I think he's going to be a really good player, but he's not Tyler. Mm-hmm. And I really wanted to prove myself out of that I could have good success or similar success as the rookies did, mm-hmm, with Anthony. Not in like a vengeful way or anything, but there's always, just as you said, it's good to have an underdog. It's good to find a chip on your shoulder, a reason to do the extra 30 minutes of serves or hitting, to go hard and pick up, because it's not just for fun, it's for training. Like, mm-hmm, to find a reason to get better. I think that 2017 was a good one to like, all right, now it's time to make plays and lead. And it was a good, but it was a similar year, and we had a couple close quarters, we had a couple good results. I think we won regionals. And then 2017 was Chicago. We went into it basically knowing we had Elite settled, which was great.
Yeah.
That's always a good thing going into nationals, when like, you're like, all right, all I need to do is just win my first round or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And we had a really close game with 2 guys in the quarters. Mm-hmm. And that was very similar to Strange, but just not in the 40s, in the sense of literally extras.
It was so tense in that building for that tournament.
It was really exciting because we started the quarters late for whatever reason. So by the time game 2 was even halfway through, everyone was watching. Mm-hmm. And that's just so cool. I mean, even win or lose, to have everyone watching a match that's really good match.
Yeah.
It's a really cool feeling. And I've been, as I said, really lucky to have multiple instances for that, whether I come out on top or not. You know, 2017, I think I proved, and Ant proved, he was up for it, up for the challenge. And that Anchored LI, even though we weren't going to be number one in the world, we could beat the number one in the world.
Right.
And we could win a big tournament. And
let's talk about that.
July was a big month. We went into my Long Island tournament. First time I felt threatened at it with Hilltop coming down.
Yeah.
Nothing against Tony and Bice or whoever. But Hilltop was definitely up and coming, and they played us really well. They would definitely say that they choked, and I would agree. Mm-hmm. Because they were better on that day, but they gave away too many points. And sometimes that's round net. You get outplay, but you mess up a couple big times. And we won that good. We won that. And then the next weekend was Boston. Mm-hmm. Honestly had a average to mediocre pool play. Sometimes that's the key, as you went through with Dylan and Jarrett, focusing on what I needed to change. I changed up my serve right before we played Osak. In the round of 32, I was practicing and I said, Ant, what if I do this and tried a different step and toss approach, and it worked. And he was like,
you looks completely like new serve.
Not complete. Just I think I went from doing one step to that 2-step walk up that I started doing. And I was actually cutting it a little bit. It was the first time I felt like the way I was tossing it in a certain way and hitting it, that I was getting more action. And then that ended up paying off when we had a really good quarterfinals against Nick Sant and Dan McPartlin. That was a crazy good quarterfinals, and rode that good playing into the semifinals, where we ended up magically taking out Tyler and PJ in our first matchup against them.
Do you think it was magical?
No, not. It was magical in the sense of, once you win that final point, you're like, holy crap.
Right. Yeah.
We just beat CS. But of course, just like any time we've played CS past then, me and Ant know how to play Ty. We figured out a system that we kind of played PJ in a sense. And then whether it was us or it was them, they didn't play to their potential. Mm-hmm. We minimized maybe their momentum, whatever it was.
Yeah.
So it's not magic, because it ended up recurring over again. But in that moment, mm-hmm. it seemed like huge, because Anchor to Lie was good. We were 6-5-7 on the table, but CS was undefeated that year, and you know, they were untouchable, and we took them out, and then we ended up thinking we were gonna have to play Strange Embrace. Origin also got a huge win. If you could see from one of Drew's videos where Chris Hornsek is walking over, or he turns around, he's like, Anchored won? Oh my, he was like annoyed because he wanted to play CS.
Yeah.
And we were kind of like, we wanted to play Strange, but then we were like, when we get to, it was like the same thing. Like, they wanted to play the better team, but then we were like, oh, well, we kind of get to play the on paper worst team. So we could, but ended up beating them in a really close three games as well. And that tournament, of course, just like you lose sometimes in the quarters and it's close, you experience those moments where it's like, all right, that's a memory. Like, mm-hmm. that's a memorable tournament, not just for me, but for other people, sport, mm-hmm. and really cool.
It's one of my favorite round of memories. Like, I guess when I put back on magical, I was thinking like, you guys outplayed them, but the real magic is just that disbelief feeling.
Yeah, it was a close game. It could have went either way. And they messed up the last point, like on them in some way. It was a bad touch, bad set, whatever it was.
Bad on two by PJ or something.
And me and Ant just looked at each other. We were like, let's freaking go. Mm-hmm. Like we just earned that. Like, we worked. We worked hard, we were in the zone, mm-hmm. and they were both more talented players than us, but we were able to play our best in spite of that, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, I feel like I was about to say, like, it's not a coincidence, but it's just like, you guys have consistently been the team that, like, when they aren't executing, you guys are executing. Add on the play, you guys know Ty, and that really is all it takes. You know, you've taken advantage. Like, I remember, I think I looked at the stats of that, and PJ just, I don't call it, well, PJ, whatever. PJ
had enough wins, you can call him out.
PJ messed up a lot in that series, including on the final point. And it's just like, you guys know how to play Ty, so he couldn't pick up for PJ, and that's how you do it. And it's, so it seems so magical, but when you look at it, it just is also so simple at the same time, you know? And that's a beauty.
So that was our, between that and winning regionals. I mean, losing nationals in the way we did was annoying, because we would have gotten to play CS in that next round. And we were like, oh, can we do it again? They wanted to play us to get revenge. I know they had played Preston a couple times, and, you know, they were like, you know, we mm-hmm. know we can beat him, or, you know, whatever. They wanted to play him, whatever it was, but I knew they wanted the revenge on us, and we wanted the chance to prove it again to them.
Yeah.
So that one was tough. But again, looking back on the season as a whole, winning a Grand Slam, going back to Boston and winning regionals in another comeback fashion, out of the loser's bracket.
Mm-hmm.
That was it was a pretty cool first season, and a good, successful first season.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so right, you talk about going in wanting to prove yourself, and right, Anchored was very, very quickly and definitely was a force that year. Right. I understand going in, right, there is that skeptical, but it was very quickly.
I think the first PR, we were like, 11th or 12th. And I remember looking at it and I was like, how, why? Like,
and then didn't you guys get a fourth at Baltimore? You're right.
We got, well, yeah.
We lost
the Hilltop in
the quarters.
Yeah. So that was a bad, I mean, it wasn't our best first tournament, and that was frustrating. Cause of course you want to, you know, get it on the right start, but either way.
So you had two more seasons, but we're going to spare those. But I do have some other questions kind of, I think a little bigger. One is that, as you will say yourself, you have not been the best server in the so-called serve ball era. How do you think that, like, how have you, right? There are many players that don't have good serves and they do not succeed at the top. What has allowed you to kind of still compete at that higher level without really having these serves that people think of as necessary?
I would say that, one, on the serving level, I've also been known for having a pretty good drop serve. So that's kept me in games where I'm not putting it past people, but maybe they have to stand slightly close enough or be on the edge, be a little bit on edge to where I can get a bad first touch off of an average looking serve. So drop serves have kept me in the game. I would say I'm also known for having pretty good serve receive. So where I can hold more often. So maybe in a game where it's typically 7 breaks to 5 with teams, maybe with me, it's only going to be 5 to 3. And I'm trying to only get,
you're putting up your side of the,
exactly. And though hitting hasn't been a strong point necessarily, I think I'm able to put it past or put it into somebody enough to hold my own. And then of course defense, getting breaks on defense. So getting breaks in different ways, you got to figure, you know, there's gotta be a formula. It's just math. You're going to 21. So you got to get there first.
You got to get in a certain way.
You got to get to 21 faster than them. So whether it's defense, holding, you know, there's a bunch of ways to not get points off serves if it's not just power serves, but I'll tell you what, it sounds a lot easier to just ace people. It looks a lot easier too when you see some premier matches and whatnot, and you're just like, or even versing people that you can tell fundamentally, I'm just better. But like the game will be 18-18 with Anchored and some random team because we're like, well, they aced us 3 times. We haven't been serving well. We broke them twice. You know, like stuff like that where we're like,
I'll correct you in a not try to be demeaning way, but I think, right, you use the quote better, and I've used that before too, where it's like, I feel like I was the better player, but they aced me a bunch, and it's just like,
they were better, you
know, in the current meta of the game and the current win conditions.
Yeah,
they were better.
Well,
right,
don't, like, say, I'm don't better say win at conditions and rain, that's where it favors me,
right? Exactly, right. Exactly. But that's so interesting, because like, I guess we're, and also with like philosophy of where round it should be, a lot of people have the philosophy, and a lot of us longer players, that a better player is one who's better at hitting, setting, defense, where, right, according to, you know, the win conditions, right, it's probably better, right, if you're a better server, if someone's a better server than you, but you're better at every other skill, right, they could be a better player. And it's so hard to like,
and I totally agree. That's the game. That's the game. And it's not me making an excuse in any sense. It's literally saying I have had to figure out ways to one. I mean, practice serves to get good enough in that way where I can compete, because at some level I have to be good enough at serves to get to get a defensive up. You can't just dink it on every time without a no hit zone.
Right. Like, you need some sort of challenge, right?
And so I think it's like, oh, Fitzy's not good at serves. Among whom? Like, among the top 15 players? Right. Yes.
Right.
Among the top 30? No. And that then I'm in the middle. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
right. It's always who you're getting compared to.
Exactly. Right?
Yeah. Exactly. That's a good point. Something else I want to ask that just popped in is, like, we see a lot of new players come in and they seem to pick up these skills really fast. Do you think playing for a long time and having these old habits has hindered your ability to improve in any way?
It's a good question, because you see players pre like pro set and stuff play in a different fashion. I don't think it's hindered me in a sense. I think some people it's hindered them because they fell in love with the old version of the game and didn't want to keep on a monthly basis challenging themselves with new skills, new this. And I think at some point, whether it's age, life, whatever, you start that passion and that bug that's in your mind to keep playing spikeball. It's slowly, for whatever reason, and it's just like with other sports, you know, sometimes it can fade. And then I think some people do make the excuse of, oh, it's just serves. It's just this. It's just, it's like, well, you just must have not loved the sport enough to want to get better at the skills that showed to win. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
Like Dylan right off the bat was acing people in 2015. That was in 2015. Like, you know, like
right,
it's,
right.
It's not as drastic, I think, as people really make it seem. Like you did a review of, forget what tournament it was, with like holds and breaks from like 2014 nationals, and like wasn't that drastic of a difference? Like like of course it's a difference, enough of like a visual difference of like the speed of play and whatnot, but
it's gotten very hard truthfully. Yeah. Right, that's what it is. It's harder.
People but it's, are pushing it, I think the game. It's always, you have to just be, say, am I accepting the challenge or am I not? You know, like I have to accept the challenge that serves are getting better. So I have to become a better receiver and become better at serves. And now hitting has more of an influence because you're farther away from the net. So it's just, am I willing to take up and keep practicing and keep, just like the people who are playing now 3 hours a day because they're obsessed with the game. Am I still going to be obsessed enough and have that, my background of knowing how to set in windy conditions, or like knowing tips and tricks and weird serves to do that maybe they've never seen before. I think experience is always going to be a help as long as you're willing to put in as much work as the people who are doing it today.
That's a good point. That makes sense. I was thinking of the experience, because it is something that's very intangible. Yeah. When we talk about these new teams, we're like, and we don't know if they have the experience. And of course we even memed it to death with Travis Kaur, but it's such an intangible thing. But I think a couple examples you gave, like more experience setting in the rain, right? Knowing what can maybe catch them off guard, your little spins, and all those things are slight edges that can help when you're competing skill. You're not just competing skill.
One or two points in a game is everything.
Yeah.
In round net, it's everything.
Yeah. That's right. And then speaking of that, something that is kind of not relevant, but I just wanted to touch on, I think that you guys in Long Island have had such a long, steady crew to play with. I want to ask, like, how has that impacted your game? And like, how have you guys just had that community? It's one of the most where like you can see 5 or 6 or 7 players that have been playing together for years.
It's true. I'd say a lot of our crew is like 2015 and on. 2013, 14, we were still just playing with our couple friends, and I wasn't running enough events to like draw in people. But we fluctuated over the years between having pickups of 30 people to 8 to 20 to 50. Like, but I think one thing is people will come out when they know they can play good round net, which means if I'm going to be there, if Tyler's going to be there, if Cam's going to be there, if Anthony's going to be there, there'll be enough advanced level people that will take up that challenge and be like, if I want to get better, if I want to play with my friends too, I got to get out here. And then that creates your own community of, we had like a little pickup yesterday of just like 9 of us, you know, and we just went out and we were, after like 2.5 hours, we were like, oh, that felt good. Like we hadn't played like good round net. Because sometimes we'll just run like an open pickup where we have a lot of intermediates and we're trying to teach them how to play. Cause I enjoy that aspect of like teaching people spike ball, like teach them about the game and like, you know, oh, there's tournaments and whatnot. And sometimes you get Anthony Alvino's out of that. Sometimes you know, like you get 1 or 2 players every year that go from that, I'm just coming out to have a good time, to, wow, okay, these guys are actually going to challenge me in some way. whether it's this person's a lefty and I want to work on my lefty receive, or they're really good at drop shots. So I get, you know, it's things like that, like focusing on little things to help work on your game. Mm-hmm. But I don't know if the secret sauce is just like the couple people that are just, they like the game and we've just all become friends through the game and we just continue to play because it's fun. But sometimes, like, not too many people have moved away. Sometimes that could be a thing with certain groups, mm-hmm. you know, like people move from California to Colorado or Massachusetts to Virginia. Like, things can happen where like a core part of the group breaks, where that hasn't happened yet on Long Island. Yeah. But it is a definitely a cool case study of there was definitely a time where, and you could probably still make close to the argument that like, we all live within 15, 20 minutes of each other, like me, Tyler, Anthony. So it's like the best group of 4 or 5 players that live within 15 minutes of each other, like mm-hmm. top 3 in the world, maybe.
Right.
Like, it's,
yeah, right.
That's three top 20 players as of 2019, with Artie, who is honorable mention of top 40, Cam, who's right there.
Right.
Like Desmond Benton, who's really good.
Just all right there. Right.
Yep.
It makes it so easy. Yeah. All right. Well, thank you. And I think that's a decent place to end. We've been talking for a while here. I'm just learning to just kind of let them rip.
Let them rip, because you know, us OGs, we could just talk for 3 hours if we wanted to. So
yeah, I think especially if this was in person, you know, I got some Zoom fatigue right now, but if this was in person, it would just be for hours. Maybe we'd stop for lunch anyway.
Go get a burger or something.
Yeah. Oh, a burger. At what, yeah. Rock Bottom? Rock Bottom?
Rock Bottom was the low-key sponsor of Anchored LI for multiple tournaments in Boston when we won. Every time we went to that restaurant, we won in Boston. So that was our key.
That's a sponsorship.
I can give it away now that I'm on a different team.
Yeah.
As of like an hour and a half ago.
Yeah. All right, before I do my intro, of course, thank you for being on, but I wanted to pass to you if you want to plug something, aka maybe your new team.
New team, Naughty Roundnet. I realized halfway through the podcast that's I can't point, but it's me and Jarrett right there in the background. Naughty_roundnet on Instagram. Might be making a Facebook page soon about it too. But other than that, Ryan Fitzgerald on YouTube as well as Facebook. Instagram is RyanFitz95. But I post a lot of stuff on YouTube, or I used to. I go in binges. Sometimes I'll be a lot of content in a month. Sometimes I'm dry. But follow, subscribe. I'd love to see, you know, the more engagement there is, of course, the more encouragement to post more content. Isn't that right, Mike?
Guys, getting comments is just the best thing.
It's gold. It's gold. I'm in a very similar boat. It's just even seeing the difference of 5 likes to 20 likes is like, wow, that was such a successful video.
It does so much. It does so much. Especially I look at my videos and like, I think 85% of the viewers are unsubscribed. And it's like, come on. Come on,
guys. If you made it this far, you have to be subscribed.
Yeah, I would think so. So anyway, thank you, Ryan, for joining.
Absolutely.
This has been very fun. Another Mike. Great one for the books.
I'll make sure to do a lefty on two next time I play.
Yes, thank you. I'm truthfully in love with lefty on twos, even more so now. They've always been the best hit in the game. Always. All right. To the viewers, if you made it this far, thank you, unless you just like skipped to the end because you wanted to see the outro for some reason. Thank you for listening. Really appreciate you. Like Fitzy said, we love when people interact, whether that's a like, comment, subscribe, anything. Would love to hear. Of course, the comment I always say is let me know what guests you would like to hear from. I'm very curious about that. Like I said in the intro, if you want to catch the other episodes, they are on where you can find podcasts on YouTube, and you can find all Lefty on Two stuff on leftyon2.com. But anyway, I've been Mike White, of course, joined by the Ryan Fitzgerald. Thank you again. We hope to see you next time.